our agenda would then be the proposed settlement agreement. And Mr. Sato, I'll let you tell us what this is all about.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, and members of the hearing team, good morning. My name is Reed Sato. I am the director of the Office of Enforcement for the State Water Resources Control Board. And I hope someday to be able to come down here and to talk to you about some of the really interesting things that our Office of Enforcement is doing, and to talk about some of the initiatives that we've got going on that will be of direct benefit and of interest to those of you here in Region 3. However, today, I'm appearing merely as an attorney advising the prosecution team in this matter. And I want to talk to you specifically about the efforts that we have made to try to create a settlement alternative for those of the community who are faced the proposed cease and desist orders. Now, I just want to say that, you know, people look at me as the head of the Office of Enforcement and think that I always want to bring a heavy hammer on people. And that's absolutely not true. I believe in settlement. I believe in the philosophy of trying to work out settlements whenever you can with people who face enforcement actions. I mean, I've settled the first major Superfund case in the state of California. I've done the first multi-million-dollar hazardous waste case in the state of California, the three largest penalty cases in the United States for underground storage tank violations. All of those judgments we obtained as a result of the settlement process. So that's where I am. That's what I believe in. Now, of course, in this situation, there are some difficulties poised for settlement. I mean, we have 45 disparate parties who have different interests, different ideas about what they want to see accomplished. And we also are dealing with a cease and desist order process as opposed to a penalty situation or something else. So the parameters and the kinds of things that can be negotiated are somewhat more constrained. But still, I don't think that serves as a barrier for wanting to try to go forward and see if we can accomplish some kind of resolution, some kind of settlement. If you don't mind, I'd like to just go through a little bit about the history of the settlement negotiations to explain where we started and how we got to where we are. You know, it goes without saying that in order to have a settlement, you have to have settlement discussions. In order to have settlement discussions, you have to have two willing parties to start talking about this. Now, as far as I know, and of course I have come to this procedure very late in the game, but as far as I know, there was no inquiries on the part of the CDO recipients to talk about settlement until about October of 2006. And I was approached by a couple of the CDO recipients after a deposition that took place of Mr. Briggs, and they said, look, Reed, you know, is there any way that we can try to put off the CDO-type proceedings? Is there some other method that the prosecution team might consider for achieving the same result but without seeing the harsh results of what they consider to be the result of CDOs? And, you know, like I said, I'm interested in settlement. I went back, talked to the prosecution team, and within a couple of days, I think, we put together a draft settlement proposal, and we provided it to those interested CDO recipients. And over the next few weeks, we exchanged various drafts. We understood that these people that we were dealing with on the CDO side were consulting and sharing it with other people. We didn't know exactly who, but we're getting their input as to the kinds of issues that they wanted to see. And we crafted, it was a back and forth. It was a good negotiation. I think we learned a lot about the perspectives that these people were faced or what they had about the process that they were being faced. In about October 24th, we had put together a document that was, I think, well enough along that I came down to Los Osos, met with members of the community. We went over what was the draft settlement alternative at that time, line by line. I didn't try to talk anybody into it. I just kind of went through it, explained what each of these sentences, what each of the paragraphs that we had proposed meant. I think we had a good discussion. They pointed out some ambiguities in what I had presented to them. I left that meeting, fixed them, sent them back. And very shortly thereafter, we got some interest on the part of several of the persons at that meeting saying, yes, this type of settlement approach would be acceptable to them. They wanted to sign up. They asked us if they signed up, could we take them off the hearing process for the CDO hearings, we said absolutely that would make the right sense, until we got approval from this board as to whether or not this kind of settlement agreement that we had crafted was acceptable to this board. Now, shortly thereafter, so we started on this process, and I'll say we came up with something that I call our original settlement option. And that was very much parallel in terms of substantive terms along what the prosecution team had presented as our proposed cease and desist order. After that, we were contacted by another group of CDO recipients. I shouldn't say another group, but a group of CDO recipients had decided to retain counsel, and through that counsel, they were expressing to us certain changes they would like to see in the settlement process. And in fact, as you may know, they submitted a fully signed settlement agreement to me, and I think they submitted as evidence, in a number of them submitted as evidence as part of their submissions. Of course, because we hadn't negotiated or met with these folks, we didn't accept their settlement agreement, but we did, in fact, start conversations with their counsel. And they were good conversations. I mean, they were raising issues to us about their perception that the way that we had structured the original settlement agreement and the proposed CDOs was, it looked to them like we were trying to force them into an unrealistic time schedule for having a sewage treatment facility built for their community. Also, they thought that perhaps they were interpreting our proposals, settlement and CDO proposal, as one that was trying to force them into a Tri-W project. And that was certainly not our intent, and so we tried to think long and hard about whether there was a different approach that we could take to alleviate those types of concerns. And I'm happy to say that we did come up with a different type of approach. I should say a different approach. I mean, I think we clarified what our original intent was in our original settlement option. We came up with what's something I would call a revised settlement option. And that is the document that we have served to the board, and we have made it available to all of the proposed CDO recipients. And that is what I believe many of the CDO recipients who have indicated an interest in settlement, that is the document that they found acceptable to them to enter into. I want to say that, you know, we were not successful in getting all of the CDO recipients that we were negotiating with to sign up to our revised settlement option. And I think it's unfortunate, and I'm sorry that happened. But what seemed to happen is that we had a breakdown on a couple of issues that we, the prosecution team, thought were very key. One was, in terms of our approach was that if the community sewer system was going forward under the AB 2701 process, things would be fine. But if there was, if that process didn't go forward, there should be some clear consequences or things that would happen if that process wasn't on track. There was a disagreement between us and the other negotiating folks about what that meant and whether there would be a discharge cessation date within a time period that we, the prosecution team, felt was acceptable. Another issue that came up was that there was a question about how the document would be enforced. There was the prosecution team, as you'll see in our settlement proposal, wanted to enforce it under 13304, but wanted an alternative that we didn't think was appropriate. And there were other things, too, because sometimes, as you know, as negotiations go along, at the end of the day, things started getting Christmas treed, and you know, little things started getting added that I felt were pulling us farther apart rather than closer to the settlement process, and so we were ultimately unsuccessful with that group. Although I noticed that a couple of people that were formerly in that group have now joined and accepted the revised settlement option. So that is the history of our brief history of our negotiations. At this point, we can put up the revised settlement agreement and go through it, or since you folks have already seen it, if you would simply want to proceed and ask me questions about any particular provisions, we can do it that way.
Well, why don't you put it up so we can make sure we have the right document in front of us, and then maybe just lead us through the requirement components of it. And we'll see if the board has any questions about that. Thank you.
people in the audience able to see that?
Towards the beginning.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there are several hard copies.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, members of the audience, apparently there are some hard copies of the revised settlement option in the back.
Mr. Sato?
Okay.
Is it dated October 30th?
That is okay. The original settlement option.
Okay.
The revised says, I should say December 11th or something like that. December 7th, sorry.
What's the date?
December 7th.
The December 7th.
Thank you.
No problem.
Do we need to speak at all?
I think we have all read these because they've been posted.
Yeah.
But what I had asked staff to do was to prepare binders so that the board members wouldn't have to go through and do their own compilations of exhibits and comments and things of that nature. So it looks like that did not get included in what we have. We have the October 30th one, not the December one.
Oh. Sorry.
We've read it.
We've read the new one.
Right. But
what you may find is that it may be attached to a letter dated December 6th from Mr. Packer to the designated parties. Okay.
Why don't you go ahead?
All right.
Okay. You've got it up on the screen, and we'll fill in as we get copies.
Well, basically, I mean, I'm not going to go line by line, because let me just pick on the high points, and if people want to stop me and ask me about a particular paragraph, please do so. Section A is basically the recitals. Number 5 basically says nothing in this agreement shall be deemed an admission of liability on the part of the discharger. I should go back. I mean, we've identified the dischargers. We're going to identify the site. We state that the site has no wastewater disposal facility other than the septic system. We talk about how we've recommended enforcement actions in the form of cease and desist orders, and that this settlement agreement is really an alternative to what those cease and desist orders would call for. Moving on, page 2, the parties are acknowledging that there is an AB 2701 process in the works, and that we believe that if the AB 2701 process is successful in creating a community wastewater treatment and collection system that is available to the site, and the site hooks up to it, that will, in fact, satisfy the site's obligations with regard to the basin plan prohibition. Number 7 is a boilerplate about compliance with CEQA. And number 8 is the part that says that this language has been approved by this board. Now, in terms of cessation of discharge, that is starting, this is Roman numeral, this is A on page 2. So we've got two different scenarios here. One is the county is going forward on the AB 2701 process. And so in our discussions with the county, and when I say our discussions, I mean the prosecution team's collective discussions with the county, we understand that as a milestone date, January 1st, 2008, is realistic with regard to whether the county will approve a benefits assessment for the project that they're thinking about under 2701. And so it says, you know, and the language keeps on saying, as long as they keep going forward in going through this project, and they constructed and completed in, according to a schedule approved by the regional board, then the settlers can continue to use their septic systems until after the septic system, after the sewage treatment system is available to the site, then they would hook up, or then they would have to come up with an alternative for dealing with their discharge at that time. So there is no specific time schedule there for an individual to stop using their septic system, or to because it's kind of dependent on the schedule that is going on with the county in the development of the AB 2701 process. In terms of then in terms of what happens if, in fact, a person, when they have the site available to be hooked up to the available sewage collection system, if they don't hook up to it, then there are various things that they have to do to address that situation.
Mr. Sutton, could I interrupt you there?
Absolutely.
under 1A, I want to just be clear what you're saying here. The discharger shall cease all unpermitted discharges no later than 60 days after the availability of a community wastewater collection system. So the scenario could be that the there's a chicken and egg here issue that I want to resolve. The facility gets built and hookups start happening, but there are 4,000 homes to hook up. So if a party that's settled is far down on the list, it might not happen in 60 days.
Well, you have to only do it 60 days after the availability after the availability of the community collection and treatment system for connection to the site.
Okay, so that takes care of the how far down the line
right.
problem.
Right, we anticipated
you are.
That you know there okay. might be a different time schedule for different people
okay.
within the community.
Great. Okay, and the second question I had, I wasn't entirely clear understanding what you were saying about the indeterminacy of the date for the treatment facility. That is to say, you have milestones. You have a January 1st, 2008 milestone. Is there any relationship between Part A1 and Part A2? In other words, if a treatment facility is not completed by January 1st, 2011, although it is under progress, it's in progress, what's the how do I interpret the language here?
Okay. I didn't get to A2 yet.
Okay, so maybe I'm jumping the gun, but it seemed like that was a separate issue. So
it is. I mean, the idea is that as long as the AB 2701 process is moving forward, regardless of when it's actually and ultimately completed, that people who have signed up to this agreement still get to use their septic system until that 60-day deadline that's identified. Now, in the situation of where there is no AB 2701 process going forward, that's what A2 is designed to address.
Okay, but the only milestone appears to be the benefits assessment on January 1st, 2008. I don't see other milestones.
Well, let me get to that.
Between now and some other date.
Right. Well, because we don't know what those milestones are going to be at this point in time, the milestone that we did identify was January 1st, 2008. And so we know that that's the soonest that we can be certain that a project under AB 2701 is not going to go forward. So if it were going, so let's say we passed January 1st, 2008 and the project is going along, but somewhere along the line, it stops, you know, for whatever reason. And we put that in this document. If there is a material cessation of the AB 2701 process, as determined by this board, it's not going to be the staff's determination, it will be the board's determination, then that the settling dischargers would also then be required to cease discharge within a set time period.
And Mr. Sato, do you have any indication as to when the county is going to have this assessment vote or election?
The information that we received from our conversations with the county was that the approval of the benefits assessment that we contemplate here will take place in December of 2007. So that is why we picked January 1st, 2008. So, I talked about A2 and A3. Does that kind of conceptually already, do you want me to go through those again?
Sure.
Okay. So, in this situation, so in A2, we're talking about what happens if the benefits assessment is not approved by the county by January 1st, 2008. We said that, okay, that means that if it's not going forward, then there's no project on the horizon. And there's really no community-wide effort to try to address the basin plan discharge prohibition. So we would then want the settling parties to then figure out a way to cease their discharge by January 1st, 2011. And I can tell you that we originally had January 1st, 2010, but we have been told that the January 1st, 2010 has a lot of baggage associated with it, and it's somehow associated with the completion of the Tri-W site, and so therefore we thought in order to decouple our settlement proposal with any issues related to the construction of the Tri-W project, we put in January 1st, 2011. And then item number three is basically what I talked about in terms of the material cessation. Once we get past the January 1st, 2008 hump, if down the road something else happens that causes the project to stop, then there's also a requirement that they cease discharges in order to comply with the basin plan prohibition.
Could you speak to the sentence that says the discharger shall cease all discharges from the septic system by the later of January 1st, 2011, or 2 years following written notice by the executive officer of the material cessation. I assume that the later of 2011 or 2 years would be a determination that the board would make and would then instruct the executive officer. Is that right? I mean, because...
Well, here's
is that a decision that the executive officer would make, whether it's 2011 or 2013, or
no? Here's how I envision it to work. I mean, the reason why it says later is, let's say we get past the January 1st, 2008 hump, and we get to the middle of 2008, and all of a sudden then we find out that there's been a material cessation of this project. If we didn't have the later of, then it would just require people to stop using their systems 2 years after that determination of material cessation. That 2 year period might occur before January 1st, 2011. To us, it didn't make any sense to have that earlier period when we'd already given them 2011 in the prior paragraphs. So that is the explanation.
And so that I'm clear on something, and maybe this has already been discussed, but let's say that the first assessment vote fails. Can there be a second assessment vote that takes place in, 6 months or a year after that first one? And then what would happen?
Well, I assume that, we're hoping that the first assessment vote will obviously be successful, and the county will be in a position to approve this project by January 1st, 2008. Let's say they don't. I mean, nothing according to this agreement, pursuant to this settlement agreement or to this language, requires anybody to do anything at this point. I mean, The requirement to cease their discharges is down the road. It's January 1st, 2011. There could be a number of things that happen in the interim that would cause the project to be back on track. And we have a provision in C, number 6, that talks about how the compliance dates can be extended by the executive officer, provided there's reasonable progress in implementing a wastewater collection and treatment system for the community. So, you know, the way we envisioned it is that this would give, well, we want to create a pretty, good target date for this process. There is some flexibility given to the executive officers to modify this order if things don't work out as we anticipate that they should work out.
Okay.
I basically talked about the substantive provisions of item A. You know, it's important to note that in number 4, A4 says that nothing in the agreement authorizes discharges from the septic system at any time, whether before or after, you know, January 1st, 2011. Now, we have certain interim compliance requirements. This is the requirement that there be kind of an interim inspection, pumping inspection and repair regimen imposed upon the settling parties. It would be something they do now or have done within the last 3 years, and then every 3 years on a going forward basis until they are able to cease their discharge. And that is basically the substance of our that's the substantive part of our agreement. In terms of the other provisions, you know, we're talking about that if they submit reports, it has to be done. The people have to submit an oath as to the submissions that they're making. We allow for discharges to work cooperatively in terms of satisfying requirements of the agreement. I would consider this kind of boilerplate stuff. We want them to inform subsequent owners and occupants of this agreement and provide them with a copy. We want to be notified if there's a change in the ownership of the property. So within or following the close of escrow or transfer of record. And we want to know about new occupants of the property. And then, of course, we have item number 6, which is the ability of the executive officer to extend the dates and also the requirement that the executive officer extend certain dates if, in fact, there are a time schedule order issued to either the CSD or the county related to the construction of the community wastewater treatment system that is contemplated. Any questions about that part?
Not yet. Okay, the reporting requirements, once they do their inspection and pumping, I had some concern that a kind of a standardized form be used and that it be something that is in use, you know, in other jurisdictions. I know that Santa Barbara County has one that is mandatory to use, and I think that Mr. Thomas had compiled something and submitted that to the prosecution team and that those designated parties that had email access. Have you had a chance to take a look at that?
I think Mr. Thompson has. I'll let him address
we could maybe
that.
Put that up on the projector. Mr. Thomas, can you maybe tell us how you put this together and what information you relied upon?
I looked at the forms used by the County of Santa Barbara and the County of San Luis Obispo. As you mentioned, the County of Santa Barbara's form is mandatory. The County of San Luis Obispo's form is not. They're very similar. I think the County of San Luis Obispo form is based on the County of Santa Barbara's form. So this is very similar to the County of Santa Barbara's form. It is different in that all of the information must be filled out. We say that in the beginning. And that we mention what a qualified inspector is, and that's someone with a C42 sanitation system contractor's license. All the other information that is listed there is the same as you would see on the Santa Barbara County form, and most of it is on the San Luis Obispo County form.
Okay. I don't know how the board feels about this, but it has been my thought that there should be a standardized form that is used in Los Osos as we go forward with this process, and that this be that form. Now, this was not part of the settlement discussions that Mr. Sato had with these designated parties. So if the board feels that this is something that should be included, that would be a change to it. So I'd like to hear from the board how they feel about this
Mr.
form
Chairman.
Or anything else about the settlement agreement. Dr. Press.
Do you want to hear about the form or about the settlement agreement?
Well, let's hear about the form.
Well, I think my colleagues have Mr. Hayashi and Mr. Jeffries have.
I'm assuming we're going to put this for the whole county, as opposed you made a notation only to move forward with Los Osos.
The county is we're not proposing that for the whole county.
Okay. Why are we not having?
Well,
the
Los
same?
Osos has its own set of challenges.
All right.
That the rest of the county doesn't, and.
The question I have is that if we're going to require a C42 license, okay, so if you have Mr. Jeffries' septic tank service and he as the general contractor has the C42 license and he sends his employee out that could be Mr. Z, is he qualified to do the inspection or is he required to have that same C42 license?
Using this form, if this form were made a part of the settlement, the person doing the inspection on site would have to have that license.
And that's not unreasonable, I don't believe, is it?
Okay.
All right.
Mr. Jeffries.
Well, my comments on this, I think standardization is very important, and to have everybody have the same document instead of having several different documents submitted to the staff. My concern in reading the provisions, it's kind of loose, and I don't know, in my experience, you always hear that I don't know, I wasn't explained to, it wasn't clear to me, all these different scenarios, and I don't know if we can put everything in there to clarify what these particular individuals would have to do. My other concern is that I really don't read into what the consequences if they don't fill it out and don't provide it or don't make the repairs that are needed to bring their septic tank up to standards. There is some reference in this.
There's an enforcement provision that we haven't gotten to yet. Because we haven't gone through the complete agreement yet, so maybe
okay.
You might wait to make the comments about
the entire
agreement.
I agree the standardization of the form would be extremely important. And then is it going to be up to the staff to monitor each one of those and make sure the forms come in on time? And how, are we going to have to run after these individuals to make sure they get their forms in? There's a lot of cumbersome difficulties I can see. Of course, we're not talking about a whole lot of people at this particular time, but it could be expanded as we continue hearing these individual CDOs. Maybe if I pull it up a little closer. And please excuse me, I'm fighting a cold and my voice may disappear on me, so those are some of my concerns, Mr. Sato.
All right. My apology, Mr. Sato. I thought you had finished with your discussion of the settlement agreement. Otherwise, I wouldn't have launched into the report.
No, there's a couple of key points still to be covered.
But go ahead.
We'd be happy to cover. We can just talk about the reporting part right now, since you did raise it.
Okay, let's finish that.
Yeah, this is Matt Thompson with the prosecution team. I think we're comfortable with the form, but there are several people who have already pumped out their septic tanks in an attempt to demonstrate cooperation. And so I think we would have to deal with the fact that they've already believed that they've satisfied the interim compliance requirement, even though the settlement agreement has not been approved or the CDOs have not been approved. So we'll have to deal with that issue. As far as Mr. Jeffrey's concern about will it be up to staff to track these things, and yes, it will be, but that is what we do. We track reporting of that type of thing, so we're up to the task.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I just ask, does the settlement have to be go back to the parties in order to incorporate this form? And if so, I'm not really sure why that would be the case. After all, it's a reporting requirement. Isn't that something that the staff works with each party to determine what the reporting or what a form? I mean, isn't that something up to the discretion of staff?
Well, the settlement agreement will go back to the settling dischargers, and I would just anticipate this would be like an attachment to the settlement agreement, and we would expect them to use
this
form.
What I meant was that would we then have to have another hearing in order to approve the settlement, because dischargers would have to have a chance to look at the form and then come back, or can we move ahead?
Oh, my impression is that this is the hearing for you folks to tell us what type of form of settlement you are comfortable with. We don't have anybody who's actually signed a settlement agreement with us, and so this is for you folks to give us input as to what you consider to be an acceptable alternative to a CDO.
All right. Thank you.
That's correct. The process would be, if the board approves this settlement and indicates that it is their desire that the form be incorporated into the agreement and order that has been proposed here, then it would be up to the prosecution team and the settling parties to stipulate to that change and then actually execute the agreements. But no further
thank you.
No further proceedings before the board would be necessary for that purpose.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I understand that obviously folks haven't signed the agreement yet, but you do have commitments at this point, right?
That's correct.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
All right.
Continue.
So continuing on, I mean, we have a section dealing with modifications. The agreement obviously can only be modified with the agreement of the parties and the approval by the executive officer, or as provided for by law. We have, moving on to the next clause, we have what I call a most favored status clause, which means that people who settle now with the prosecution team, if we reach future settlements or further settlements in the future and they have materially different terms that somebody thinks would be a benefit to them, we don't think that the early settlers should be at a disadvantage. They ought to be able to have the ability to opt in to those types of changes. You know, assuming that those changes are acceptable to the board, people who settle now ought to be able to opt in for that. And so that is why that is there.
Well, then what if the reverse happens, that something comes up and you decide that there should be a more stringent provision put in?
The good thing about early settlement is that you get the benefits of early settlement, but you shouldn't get the detriments of early settlement. With regard to, and then there's remedies for failure to comply. This was an issue that we had with some people. I mean, we intend to make this order enforceable as a 13304 order issued by the executive officer. And we wanted to point out, however, that, and we wanted to spell out clearly for people that there are penalties for violation of the terms of this agreement. So, as you said, Mr. Jeffries, that people don't say, well, we didn't know that there would be some bad consequence if we chose not to comply with this agreement. What we did want to point out, though, however, is that we are not recommending that there be any kind of required minimum penalty that might otherwise apply, and that's the assurance that we've provided for in this document, and that the parties, of course, are not waiving any rights or defenses they may have with regard to any action to enforce the terms of this agreement. And then the second clause of that remedies for failure to comply is that we will treat these settling parties as cooperative discharges to the extent that we have to take any further enforcement actions down the road to deal with them. We think that they get a plus point for their cooperation with regard to this agreement, and that will be a consideration in the future. And then there's a boilerplate about how if we don't enforce it, it doesn't mean that we waive it. And then, you know, we're down to the very end terms, which is, you know, the termination of the agreement. The agreement terminates when the discharger connects to a community sewer treatment system or they are no longer associated with the property. And that's basically it.
Okay. Mr. Thomas.
Sure. On page 7, under remedies for failure to comply, second paragraph, the last sentence says, no negotiated resolution of any enforcement action is required or guaranteed by this provision?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand that.
Well, what it says is that in that paragraph, we're talking about if we have a disagreement down the road, and that we think that they are having in violation of the consent agreement, that we will negotiate first. We aren't going to go straight into an enforcement action. We will have a meet and confer to talk about whatever issue that is in the future. And that's all we're guaranteeing, is that we're going to have a meeting, we're going to talk in good faith. But by having those meetings and by talking in good faith, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that there will be a resolution as a result of those good faith negotiations.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I think what I would like to do is see if there's any of the settling parties that would like to just speak to this issue briefly.
Mr. Chair, before you go to that,
yes,
can I ask Mr. Saddle one more question?
Of course.
And it's dealing with a person that sells his property, he or she sells his property during this settlement agreement process, and they neglect, not purposely, but in the excitement of selling their home or their property, they neglect to notify us, and the new resident is not aware of the issue. I didn't clearly read how do we handle that issue.
Well, you have enforcement discretion to penalize somebody for that neglect. The person who sells the property who fails to notify, that would be something that the board can decide whether or not that's something they want to pursue. In terms of the new party, I mean, the new party, if they are buying, you know, without any knowledge of this particular process, then that's a different type of issue. And I don't know that we can solve that in this particular agreement. Although at this point in time, I don't know how anybody could buy some property in Los Osos without now being told that there is this problem.
It's stranger things have happened,
I suppose. But no, we can't address somebody who's not part of this agreement at this point in time, I don't believe.
Well, the point I wanted you to bring out was that the seller still has the obligation. And just because they sell the property and maybe have left the area, that doesn't relieve them the responsibility of possible penalties for not revealing that information.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there... I see Mr. Scheib's hand. Are there any other settling parties that would like to address the board on the proposed settlement agreement before the board starts to discuss it. Okay, let's have Mr. Him first.
Very Tingle first.
Okay.
Mr. Young, board. As a contractor.
And your name, sir?
Larry Bishop.
Okay.
I'm speaking on the form for reporting that you required a C-42 license, I believe it was there. As a contractor under state law, I'm responsible for anybody that works under my license. And if you're requiring the person that has the license to go out there and do the work, you may only have one person in a business that holds that license. So you're asking just the one person in each pumping company to go out and do all the inspections. However, under California law, he's still responsible for his employee to do the inspection and do it correctly.
So he's required to train
that person? He's required to make sure that that person fulfills the requirements, same as if he is doing the requirement. Mm. So your form could just say that it has to be authorized by or signed by a C-42 license rather than inspected by somebody that has a C-42.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Scheib?
Yes, thank you. Rob Scheib, 1024. Regarding the form, the County of San Luis Obispo has a form. Myself and several of the other discharges have already pumped, as Mr. Sato said, in an effort to show we are compliant. And I would request that you continue to use this form. It's already made. They're available readily. The pumpers in our area are familiar with it. It comes with multiple parts, so different parts can be filed with different people, and it's already ready to go. Your staff is already dealing with the County of San Luis Obispo and Barry Toll in designing this form and for making sure this form meets your standards. And so I think that should probably be the form to follow. So that's just my input on that.
Can we see that form?
Here you go. Okay.
The question would be, what is the difference between that one and the one that we're proposing?
From some of the things, I got a chance to look at the other one. It seems like there's questions like number of bedrooms and things like that. Things are in larger detail. A whole page is dedicated to the little square that's in the corner of the site map. A whole page is dedicated to that and the one that you are putting forward. And it just seems like a lot of other little things like that. But that would be something your staff could also work out with the County of San Luis Obispo.
Mr. Shawcross.
Yeah. Can I ask Mr. Thomas, when you put this together, was there any big difference between the one you're proposing and the San Luis Obispo County form?
There was not.
That's important to our board.
I didn't think there was much difference at all. One had a little more detail. Yeah. I used the one that had more detail. And I did take out that square that Mr. Scheib was referring to. Yeah. That is intended to be a map of the site. I wanted to make it bigger, put it on a page, and require that they actually fill it out.
I certainly. Why would we create yet one more form when this is the county form?
Right. I'd have to agree that just in the interest of bureaucratic irrationality, that we keep the one form.
I think I need to take a look at that form, but unless you can move it, I think that this form does not require that a C-42 license.
Yeah, that change could be made.
Yeah, well.
Near the bottom of the page on what's on the screen right now, it has the question, inspector's qualification, C-42.
But it doesn't make it mandatory.
That's right, and we did make that change.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But that can be in part of the settlement itself. Why does it have to be in the form? It can be in the settlement so that you don't have to modify. I mean, it sounds trivial, but creating a new form with all the printing and then who's got the form and who doesn't have the form and, oh, I had the wrong form and now I'm out of compliance. I mean, let's try not to do that. Let's just take the form, put in the settlement that it has to be certified by somebody who holds a C-42 license, and that's it.
Also, just so you're aware, the county form, I believe Al Septics charges an extra $85 to fill out the county form, although he also has his own inspection form that he fills out that it doesn't cost the extra $85. And I believe with Clay's, I paid like $125 extra to have the form filled out. So those are additional things that you might want to consider additional costs to settlers.
I know Santa Barbara County, their pumpers also require extra money to fill the form out.
Okay.
The mandatory form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, someone just pointed that out to me, so I wanted to make sure you guys were aware of it.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. In addition, let's see. I would ask that you approve this settlement. Regarding some of the notification issues that Mr. Jeffries has raised, there are serious notification issues with this whole process, and settlement is the appropriate response. This is settlement. I was one of the ones who first approached Mr. Sato regarding settlement. And just to correct one item that he said, I went through my old emails and I found an email that I sent to Matt Thompson on February 1st of this year seeking settlement on this issue. I've been seeking settlement since this process started. My goal in entering into those settlement talks was to hopefully have a deal good enough where we could get 40 to 45 people involved in it. And I'm bothered that I wasn't able to bring the sides together to that point. But something that your board may consider to help get us there, as Mr. Sato stated, this is going to be enforced under Code 13304, which is cleanup and abatement order. I had been pushing for a 13300, which is more of a time schedule order. It doesn't carry the penalties under 13350 that a cleanup and abatement order, a CDO, would. However, under Code 13350, violation of a Brook Basin Plan prohibition is included in those enforcements. So I would ask that that section be removed, but other than that, that's about it.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Do any other settling parties wish to address the board before the board discusses what direction to give staff? Okay. What would we like to do? Yes? Yes, sir. Are you a settling party? Not this time. Well, you're a designated party. Come forward.
Board, we're party 1029, and I would 1029. And I'm just asking if the board would be seeking comments from parties that chose not to settle.
Not as part of this portion of the proceeding. Okay, but obviously later, if you're a designated party, you're going to have time to go ahead and say what you want during that time frame. What you're trying to do is that those that had agreed with Mr. Sato's team to settle based on the terms that he had presented to them, that's what we would address at this point in time. I'm sure that a lot of people have maybe some questions and want to know what variations are available. That can be taken up with Mr. Sato later.
I guess my comment is more to find out if the board would be interested in hearing why some parties, the language we found objectionable in the settlement, and reasons we chose not to sign it. I'm not sure when the proper time to present that would be.
Yeah. You know what, not?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to speak to that issue if you're going to entertain it.
Mr. Jeffries?
While you're going to give a response to that, I'd like to have a response if some of the
people that are here have not agreed to sign, but during the process they have a change of mind and want to join in. What is the process for them to do that? That hasn't been addressed.
Well, we have indicated that people could sign or settle with us until we started the CDO hearing process. Now, I think that this has basically been the prelude to the CDO hearing process. You know, at the after this is over, and if this board decides to adopt or approve some type of settlement language, I think that we would give people the opportunity to try to participate. I mean, like I said, I believe in settlements. And I don't think that, you know, we're going to arbitrarily hold up people. But if we go to a hearing against somebody and they get a CD, you know, at the end of the day a CDO is issued, you know, I don't know at that point.
Well, let me just go a little bit further in my question. I understand if we start the process, then it may be a little bit too late. But if I'm sitting in the audience and my number hasn't come up, and what I've heard from the previous two or three processes of the CDO is I have a change of heart and I want to join in with the settlement, is it too late for me to join in?
I don't know. I mean, I think that I don't want to encourage people to hold out to the very end. They should decide after they hear that the board has approved a settlement proposal to sign up, either sign up to that settlement proposal or decide to, you know, express their views about the CDOs in their CDO process.
Well, as you know, a lot of time there's a lot of hearsay information that's out floating around in the community. And the reason I bring these questions up because they're hearing it directly from the source. And some people that are here may change their minds one way or the other. And I also believe in settlements and in negotiations. I would like to give those people afforded an opportunity if they decide before their number is called that they would have an opportunity to contact the prosecution team and say, I would like to be added.
Now, that would be fine, you know, with me, if people want to do that.
But I
mean, if someone comes forward after we give the prosecution team direction and we passed that part of this proceeding, and someone then decides later, you know what, I think I changed my mind, I want to opt in. If they tell Mr. Sato that and they're here to go ahead and, you know, put that on the record, we have that kind of agreement, that's fine with me.
I just wanted to make that understood.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
No, that would be fine with us, too.
Yeah.
If I could just speak to one point that the speaker is trying to raise.
Right.
I mean, I think this part of the proceeding is to deal with our settlement proposal to you folks and your approval of that process. If they have a difference of opinion as to how this matter should be resolved with regard to the proposed cease and desist order hearings, or they have language they want to propose, that is the proper time to do that is when they are dealing with the cease and desist order. If they want to propose alternative language as to what the cease and desist order should look like, that's the time to do it, but not at this point, not at this juncture.
Well, let me just ask the audience, how many non-settling designated parties would like to share with the board their thoughts on why they are not going to enter into the settlement agreement? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think what we risk is actually turning this hearing into a settlement agreement negotiation. And I think what they have to say, I'm certainly interested in why they didn't want to settle, but I think the appropriate time would be during their 15 minutes.
I have to agree that we risk modifying the settlement so much that parties that are already committed to settling will opt out because now the language is being changed. So I want to hear about it, but I think we've been presented by two parties with an agreement, and we need to give some direction.
Okay. Well, just to play devil's advocate, I could see some benefit in us hearing what is problematic about it, and it may actually change the direction we give the board. But I will
do what, you know, we'll do what the board wants to do as a body. Mr. Jeffries, should we just go ahead and let these people speak later during their 15 minutes, or give them an opportunity now to share some thoughts?
Well, whatever they've decided, but there are a number of people that have already made a decision. And I think, as Dr. Press has brought out, that, you know, we can deliberate this whole settlement agreement for the rest of this day and may not come up with a conclusion at the end of that time.
All right.
And the whole agreement may be so changed or wanted to be changed that we would have to go back to the drawing board and completely redo it. And I, what I've seen in the questions I've asked, it's pretty much, I've cleared in my mind where I would like to go with this.
Okay. All right, Mr. Hayashi?
I would agree with my colleagues.
Okay. All right. One last comment from you. Yes, Mr. Scheib, and number 1029. Yeah. We're going to move on, and the board's going to give direction.
I just wanted to remind you that the settling dischargers represent 0.5% of the people in Los Osos thus far, and you have a long process in front of you. And maybe getting some of these arguments now might save you 20 hearings later on today and tomorrow.
Okay.
Just something to think about.
All right. Thank you. And 1029?
Director and board, I would basically mirror what Mr. Scheib just said. Mr. Press, I feel if we were allowed to express our concerns with this agreement, that no one would actually opt out, because our concerns were of a limiting nature of the agreement, and there were approximately 20 of us represented by council that had chosen not to sign this because of concerns.
Well, is there one of you that can represent the group of about 10 hands that went up that can just so there's a bunch of different issues that everybody has.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's what I guess we're not going to get into right now.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
You're represented by counsel in the negotiating settlement?
Yes, sir. Strictly for settlement purposes, counsel's not here today.
And counsel's not here today.
It was a limited contract with the council.
Okay.
Well, one thing, I just want to reiterate one thing that Mr. Sato pointed out, is that future settlements may be entered into, and the early settlers will get the benefit of those later settlements if there's some beneficial change. So it doesn't mean that this is the only settlement possibly. Maybe the prosecution team and these other folks can come to a different type of agreement, and the folks who sign on to this earlier agreement would then, I assume, have the choice to keep the original agreement or sign on to the new settlement agreement. So this isn't it's not a set
closed door.
Right. Moreover, as Mr. Shawcross has pointed out, the board can give direction to the prosecution team, and if the board hears in the individual presentations that there is something, some change to the settlement that they would like to see, then we can react to that and listen to it, see what, discuss it, and give some reaction to
that. Okay. Well, does the prosecution team expect that we will be just giving direction without a board vote?
No, I was expecting to approve.
Okay, with a vote. Okay. All right. Okay. This gentleman is a non-settling party. Did you wish to address this briefly, sir? In your name? Your name?
My name is Keith Weimer.
Okay.
I live in the Prohibition Zone.
Okay.
I've had experience as a negotiator with the state. I negotiated 3 or 4 labor contracts with the Department of Personnel Administration as a union member. And designated parties asked me to sit on in on some of the discussions. So I have a pretty good overview and idea of the problems with this agreement. And if they had agreed for me to let me speak on it, I could, I think, run some of those by you. And I think actually you've already recognized a few of them. I've noticed from your comments that you have some of the same concerns that I had and that a lot of the designated parties had. So if you would allow me just to briefly go over three or four areas here, I think it may save a lot of problems down the line, because you do intend, I understand, to send this out to the community. And I know as a future designated party, I'm going to be really arguing against it. And I can tell you why, and I can tell you what the solutions can be, and I think they're fairly straightforward.
I'll give you 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, hang on.
Thank you, Chair.
Very first, I would object a little bit to the characterization. I don't think it was fully negotiated. There were only two people involved in the negotiations to begin with. People are basically taking this as an unpleasant alternative. In the agreement, there's not even the mention of the CA, that it's a CAO. There's just a reference to the code section. So people are going to object to it in the future. The second, of course, as you pointed out, that January 1st, 2008 date is really problematic. That sets all the conditions basically on that one vote. There's even a question of whether that attempts to coerce a vote, which is problematic. Of course, if something starts up after 2008, you're going to want to have something in the contract that allows you to not automatically go to the options, which are that somebody installs an on-site system, or that they have to cease and desist. Theoretically, under this agreement, on January 2nd, 2008, people will, if there is no vote at that point, people will begin to look at on-site systems, which can undermine your whole intention here of trying to get a assessment district. The other point is that, I'll make this again, Mr. Jeffries brought it up, is you're going to have a lot of people saying they didn't understand it. The people that were represented by an attorney did understand it. You know, it's much better, it's much more in your favor if people are represented by an attorney in this and that fully understand the language and understand what it intends to do. One point here is that I would point out that really what you intend, and you mentioned this, Mr. Young, when you first started, is that this is a cleanup. I mean, this is a interim compliance where people have to pump and inspect. It seems to me that the appropriate action is going to be to have more of a work plan. There was in the Sullivan agreement, there was a provision for a work plan under 13300, and there was also consequences that involved that would allow you to lower the hammer at some reasonable time. We do have language that would address all these issues. The negotiations were basically shut down, I think, because there was a deadline. We didn't really get a chance to finish those. And like I said again, if you have a negotiated agreement where everybody can really buy into it and it addresses all of the details that you mentioned and is one that's a thorough agreement, then you're going to get voluntary compliance on the part of the community, and it saves all the unnecessary litigation that may come out later. I'm not even sure that this agreement under these circumstances would be considered a real agreement or be, not appealable. I think that people feel coerced into this agreement. So, again, we have a much better one, and we can certainly offer a lot better language. And I just suggest that you allow the process to go forward. People were very engaged in it. It was a very good agreement. One example was that, addressing the January 1st, 2008 date, what we said is it could either be that date or it can be if any progress is going, and ongoing by 2010. Either of those would show a progression that then becomes something that you can, where you're not going to shut down the process or get people going other places just because they haven't met the 2008 date. So a lot of places that it could be a lot better.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Have you spoken with Mr. Sato about your specific concerns?
You know, I was involved in speaking with Shauna Sullivan of Sullivan & Associates and with the different members who were represented by her. And so to the extent, that I know what was there, and I did know what the last language was. There may be some minor disagreements, but basically it accomplishes what both parties are after, and it does it in a way that people will sign on.
Okay.
And I am very, you know, I am aware of what the language means, unlike most of the people who were involved.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the way settlements go is that it's between the parties that are at issue with each other. So that's the prosecution team and the designated parties. The board itself, you know, doesn't get involved in that process except in the end to review it and make any last-minute comments or suggest changes or direction. So it sounds like you've got some work to do, and I would talk to Mr. Sato at some point if that's what you want.
I feel, you know, with 3 years of fairly high-level negotiations, I feel that this can be worked out, in a reasonable amount of time. I mean, not more than a month or so.
How long have you lived in Los Osos?
Well, I was out of town a lot in Sacramento, so.
Well.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. All right, let's go ahead then, board, and decide what we want to do with the settlement agreement. Dr. Press.
Well, I don't know what to say about settlement changes at this point. I didn't hear exact language changes, so maybe this will have to be something that is another a subsequent settlement version that is proposed to Mr. Sato and then brought back.
Well, there's nothing in front of us.
No, I know that.
They're just
That's
comments.
What I'm saying.
Right.
There's if there was exact language changes, we could look at those. But I tried to take this.
It was in front of you. You have it in front of you. What they submitted in their evidence.
Okay, but I mean,
yeah. Okay, I was just letting you know it was that.
Has not been agreed to by the prosecution exactly. team, and so therefore it's not in front of us in that sense.
So, regarding the settlement that is in front of us, I have a few things to say about it. First of all, I support it. Secondly, I think it's very mild, a very reasonable settlement. It's mild because it imposes very small costs, either in time. In terms of time or money, most of which would be associated with proper tank maintenance anyway. It imposes a deadline for ceasing discharges, which the law already requires, but that date is far off and can be extended further if there is progress towards a treatment plant. However, for the record, I want to point out that as far as I'm concerned, the settlement doesn't really get us much in the way of water quality improvements anytime soon. After having seen this process for 4 years go on, I can't see how this agreeing to this settlement does anything different than what's been happening so far. That is that if you're a homeowner, you take care of your septic tank. That's all it says. You already had to abide with the basin plan prohibition. It was already the law that the discharges were in violation. So this doesn't change that. It doesn't change that at all. All it does is say that you have some time. If progress is being made by the county, by the community, why then you can still continue discharging. So I really don't see why this settlement is problematic. And so I would vote for it.
Any other board comments? None, huh? Okay,
yeah,
what
Mr.
about...
Chair. I do. I know okay. You looked at me and I didn't acknowledge, but I was just trying to think what I was going to say. This process has been ongoing for a number of years and it's been delayed for one reason or another. Settlement agreement, as Dr. Press pointed out, it really, to me, it doesn't have a whole lot of teeth more than the CDOs did to start with and the process. I'm not really opposed to the settlement agreement because I'm a strong supporter in negotiations and a settlement if you can avoid any drastic decisions that would come down. So I kind of support it, but it's kind of, to me, it really isn't language that really ties anybody up, per se. I would have liked to see a little stronger language, maybe a little bit more definition to the public, because my experience tells me that there's going to be a lot of folks out there that doesn't really understand what the language really says. Now, Mr. Chair, I would insist that whatever document we use, and I don't have any problems with using the County of San Luis Obispo for septic tanks, but whatever it is, it has to be standard that everyone uses the same form. That's, consistency is extremely important to me, and I think it's important to the staff and to the public, because everybody would be using the same document. I think that, as Dr. Press pointed out, the times of even extending this from 2010 to 2011, disconnect. Why didn't we make it 2009? Move it up a year. And of course, I guess the rationale of that is if the 2008 date, then there would be enough time to run another assessment district, or the county having an election to see if they could get something forward. So, you know, my job is to make sure that the waters of California are cleaned up and go by the basin plan. And the sooner that we can accomplish that, the better I feel, and that's my job. That's why I was put here, to make sure that the waters of California are cleaned up. So that's the only comments I have, Mr. Chair.
Down on this end? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Dr. Press?
I would just make a recommendation that there should be some language change to the Section B interim compliance requirements, some minor language change that incorporates by reference the San Luis Obispo form, and says in the language that, well, there you go. thank you. Under number two, obtain a report with a C-42 contractor's license on the San Luis Obispo County septic tank inspection form. So that would address the form consistency and the assurance that the inspection was at least certified or completed by somebody with a C-42 license. Want me to read that again?
Or can I clarify a point? The settlement agreement now states that if the settler can certify that the tank has been pumped in the previous 3 years, that's okay. So I'd like to make the settlement agreement state that that form would apply to prospective pumping.
Well, my desire would be that whoever did the pumping prior to today fill out this form.
Okay.
They can date it the date that they sign it. And they can sign it the date, you know, that they're presented with it. But I think if someone had, in good faith, had the tanks pumped before the board even issued their order or directions, to some degree they kind of jumped the gun to see what the board was going to actually require. But if they had someone do the inspection and pumping who really wasn't qualified, then we're really not, it's not fair to the others that are coming afterward that are going to have to, you know, comply with this. And so I think there's got to be some effort made to get this form complied with. So how many people, Mr. Packard, do you know have already done this pumping?
Well, I don't know how many of the current people have done it, but I'm thinking of the community in general.
I think this gets Al did it. I think Mr. Hayashi, Al has that license?
I know that Clay's has a C-42 license. I'm not sure what it is,
okay. If
they do or not. But by C-42, it's a definition is a sanitation systems contractor. And I'm assuming that if you're doing septic tank work, you need to have that license.
Okay. I'd rather just deal with that later when we face it, but that would be the requirement in my...
Because I think the key word is pump and work. I think anybody could pump a tank, and I think that you just have to show to the County of San Luis that you have the capability of pumping a tank safely and properly. And then you need a C-42 license, and that's required by state law to do sanitation systems contracting. So that would have to, that's where it would come. Underneath that, who is the contractor that was just here? Is that correct? That you need a C-42 license to do, if you're the contractor and you send your guy out there to do an inspection of a tank, he does the inspection, and you're the guy that signs off on it? Right, because the general contractor is responsible for all the work that's done underneath that license.
If the person that is pumping the tank goes out and pumps the tank, inspects it, and signs the form, the person that hired him that has the C-42 license is responsible for that signature.
Okay.
He's responsible for the work that was done, and if it wasn't done properly, he's the one that the state would go after and not the employee. The contractor itself.
That's correct. That's the way I understand.
That would be fine with me.
Yeah.
You know, the person holding the license can sign the form, even if they actually didn't go out there.
I don't think that's what he said. I think he said the employee that did the inspection would sign it, but however, the contractor is responsible for the employee that signed the contract.
Well, then there's got to be some way to identify who that employee is working for.
Well, yeah, it would be on the form as a C-42 because we're recommending a C-42 license.
Okay. Well, if you look at the way the form is written, someone just checks that off, and I don't know what
I understand
the number is.
I understand that, but... Yeah, okay.
We need to identify who has the license.
It would be the operator, right?
Do you want to put it on the form?
We're getting in the weeds here.
Well, we are, but this was kind of the problem. We had gone through the form and made changes because Michael and I had contemplated some of these subtleties. So
there's a line on the bottom that says, it says signature of qualified inspector.
He's looking at our form.
Yeah, you're looking. Well, this one, too.
That's the
San Luis one. It says right there. Signature of qualified inspector, date, and phone. What's a NAWT?
Technician? Okay. All right. Well, we need to get something on the form so that the holder of the license is identified. Okay? We want the form to be part then of the settlement agreement. We want it to be retroactive, okay? And my counsel has it shown. Let's see, this isn't B, right, John?
Mr. Chair, I'm worried that the perfect will become the enemy of the good here on the form. If we mess with the form, then you're really creating a separate form, and then you lose the benefit of consistency and the existence of a form. If you have a requirement in the language that it be completed or certified by somebody with a C-42, that is what it means. That's what it means when somebody signs this form.
That's it.
I don't think you'd want to get it, because if you're going to say, well, you have to put your license number on the form, I think you're going to... We're worried here about ease of transparency, about logistics. You know there's a form that exists. If the parties, the designated parties, know that they have to get that form, they should feel like once they've filled out the form that they're confident that it's done. Otherwise, you get into You might as well have your own form.
But this is a form that's coming back to us. Okay. We are, this is our deal. It's not the county's deal. We're just going to use the county's form because it's there. Now, I didn't hear that the form had been finalized, that there were some negotiations and discussions going on with our staff. Mr. Thompson, do you have any idea where? I've been told this form is not mandatory. Is that true?
Yeah, I'll try and clarify that. I believe that when it was developed, that staff was aware of it, but that the county has finalized it. And they gave it to the septic tank pumping company community, essentially saying it's voluntary. The county's intent with the form was to populate a database so they could track septic systems across the county.
So it's voluntary?
It was voluntary. In Santa Barbara, it's mandatory, but in here it was voluntary. There was one company, Clay's Septic, that used it consistently.
Okay.
Now, to clarify for you, I want to point out this is the signature block on the latter part of the form. And the very, it says, I certify under penalty of perjury that the foregoing is true and correct, and it has to be signed. And then right the second field there is the C42 state license number. I point this out because I believe this form meets your requirements.
That's fine.
Already.
Yeah. That's fine.
Okay.
That was from Clay's, has their own inspection form. And so basically what happened was that's my pumping. That came with my receipt. And so when I got my receipt from Clay's, I sent my receipt, the county form and everything, and I had it PDF'd and sent it in with my evidence submission. Okay.
So, Mr. Thompson, this is Clay's form, not the county's form. Does the county's form have the same?
This has a county logo.
Oh, okay. Oops. I'm sorry.
County form.
Oh.
Top right here. It's a verification form. The county.
Okay.
Oops. My mistake.
Okay.
Thank you, Matt.
Different.
It is than the other county thing.
It's different than the other county form that we were given.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Yes.
This is verified.
This is the second page.
This is another part of the same form. That's my understanding.
This is the form that you saw previously?
Yes.
Yes.
And this is the
Okay. Well then, are there any other pages to the form?
I do not believe so.
Okay, so let's make sure that pages 1 and 2 are attached as the exhibit to the agreement. Okay, thank you. All right. Mr. Richards, I think Mr. Shallcross, you have a question? Go ahead.
I move we approve the settlement agreement.
Let's see. We needed this
with
language. There was some language we needed to put in here.
With the C42.
And this would be under the interim compliance requirements B. Why don't you go ahead? The report has to come back to us.
Okay. In order to make sure that the report is submitted to the regional board and satisfies the board's concerns about the qualifications of the inspectors, I would suggest that under Section B, Interim Compliance Requirements, in the first sentence, on the third line of the first sentence, after the number 2 in parentheses, the sentence should be amended to read, obtain and submit to the Water Board a report by the County of San Luis Obispo or a septic tank pumper with a C42 contractor's license on the San Luis Obispo County septic tank inspection form and septic verification form that either describes recommended repairs to the septic system or states that no repairs are necessary.
What was the bit about the county or an inspector?
A report by the county or septic tank pumper.
They wouldn't need a pumper report if they got one from the county.
Well, the county filled out the report. I guess is what
they do their own.
Who knows? I don't know.
Okay.
The county doesn't do
That's
that.
That's fine.
But
That's
then
fine.
To add to that, an example of the form is attached as an exhibit, whatever the exhibit number is going to be, to this agreement. Yes.
May I add, to assist the county in tracking these septic systems,
right,
would it be too much to ask that we require a copy be sent to them as well?
Yes, too much.
Okay.
It is?
If they want to send one to the county or if the county wants them to, that's up
well,
to them.
I guess the county has it as voluntary right now, so if the county wants to make it mandatory,
that's up to
they
them.
Can do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have that amendment. Mr. Hausch.
For clarification, so where you say by from a septic tank pumper, are we going to, it has to be put on that form, or will we accept like a Clay's form where it has a signature and a C-42 license number?
The form is going to be attached as an exhibit to the agreement.
Okay.
It's the one we just looked at that
okay.
has two pages.
That's fine.
Yeah. We're not going to make any changes to that form.
Okay.
Okay. Do you want to restate your motion, Mr. Shallcross?
Yeah, I'll move we accept the settlement as proposed with the changed language just mentioned.
And the report being attached.
And the report being attached as an exhibit.
Okay.
No second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries unanimously.
Mr. Chair,
I'd just like to thank the prosecution team and the folks who entered into this settlement agreement.
Yeah, Mr. Jeffries?
If I may add a little levity to this settlement agreement and why we need inspections of septic tanks, this morning's paper I read, and of course this is in Australia, a lady called a plumber to inspect her septic tank because it wasn't working properly and they found a 7-foot python in it. And that's the reason it wasn't working properly.
Okay. All right.
So you never know what you're going to find.
Yeah, we're going to take a break for, let's try to make it 10 minutes. We'll convene back at 10 of 10. 10 to 11. 10 to 11. Yeah, you're right, 10 to 11.